Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
You might have noticed we're not playing our usual gong. We figured if we're going to come to China, we ought to do it right. Get the theme redone and give ourselves a whole new soundtrack. Really bring you here with us. But you want to hear the actual soundtrack for China today? Construction. There are buildings shooting up everywhere in this country. Housing developments like Ivy Humanities Villa. Office towers with names like New York, New York. Open e-business mansion, Global Square. And Future City. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy.
In the Chinese Republic of Chongqing, I'm Li Kai先生. Live from Chongqing in the People's Republic of China, I'm Kai Rizdal. So here we are, on the 56th floor of the World Trade Center in Chongqing, the biggest city you have probably never heard of. Population, 33 million. Through the four-story high windows up here, I can see, barely through the grime and the grit in the air, the mighty and equally polluted Yangtze River. From here, I can also see skyscraper after skyscraper after skyscraper. Most of them are empty, like the one I'm in, brand new and not a tenant in sight. This is Chongqing's present, gritty and post-industrial. But in a way, it's also its future, built on the hope that all these white-collar offices will be filled one day. Chongqing and China are changing, and we have brought the program here because those changes will affect all of us.
Dear passengers, welcome aboard monorail train.
Despite an English language announcement on Chongqing's monorail, foreigners are still a novelty here. And most people's English doesn't extend beyond hello and good morning, even in the afternoon. But that is sure to change as well. Kids start learning English early here. By the time they're 16, the English is better and the aspirations are bigger.
I had been wished to become a female CEO in the future. It has been my dream.
I'm really worried about our Earth's environment and the future of the human beings. So I want to do something, maybe some environmentally friendly major.
My dream is to go to Detroit because I'm very interested in motors and machinic, and I will go to university to improve myself. And if I can work in Ford or GM, that's my dream from my childhood.
Money is changing everything in this country. Now you can choose where to live, you can choose where to work, and who you want to marry. And for the first time since the communists came to power, there's a whole Chinese generation that's grown up thinking this is normal, that having disposable income is the way it's supposed to be, that life should be endless possibilities, not terminal drudgery, and that being young and well off is okay. Climb in a cab with a group of 20-somethings on a Friday night, and you'll see what I mean. The lobby of the KTV karaoke bar in central Shanghai is garish. Fake white marble floors and Grecian statues. It's a scene I managed to avoid when I was living here back in the mid-90s. There are clumps of people standing around, smoking, waiting for the rest of their group to show up. 23-year-old Patty Lian is one of them.
I'm Patty Lian Liu. I'm born and raised in Shanghai and now currently living in Shanghai with my parents and working for an American company in management consulting industry.
Patty works for Chicago-based A.T. Carney. She graduated from Fudan University here in Shanghai last year. After we hook up with her friends down in the lobby, we all head upstairs. There are dozens of private rooms, each of them with their own surround sound karaoke machine. Look at this. Patty's boyfriend is in real estate. There's an engineer and one guy whose English is way worse than my Chinese.
Hello. There you go.
Just call me Zhao.
Zhao Singer.
And there's Patty's friend Vicky.
Hello, I'm Kai.
Hello, I'm Vicky.
Nice to see you.
Vicky is my best friend in university, and she is also working for an American management consulting firm.
Patty and Vicky are the leading edge of a Chinese baby boom. 330 million people were born here during the 1980s and early 90s. And it's the choices they make that are going to be driving this economy for decades, probably the world's economy too.
I think there is a trend of consumerism and individualism. I think there are two trends of our generation. You know, we are only the only one child in our family, so disposable income is not so little.
Patty makes about 9,000 Chinese yuan a month, a bit more than $1,000. That's an extraordinary amount of money for most Chinese, even yuppies like Patty. She's saving for a Harvard MBA. I don't have the heart to tell her it's going to cost more than the $10,000 a year she's got budgeted. What money she's not putting away for that, she spends on clothes and nights out with the gang and just stuff. She's got a fancy combination phone and digital music player. But what you might call a situational grasp of intellectual property rights when it comes to music to play on that phone.
Yes, download from the website. I know that's illegal.
That's funny because when you go to Harvard, they're going to say, can't do that.
Yeah, I know. But here, that's the kind of 从众心理, you know, many people are doing that.
The rising Chinese generation, Patty and her friends, are not so different from 25-year-olds in the States. They're incredibly social. They follow pop culture trends like they were gospel. They like to spend their money. But it's been almost 50 years of communism here, followed by a blast of virtually unrestrained capitalism. And that has left what might turn out to be the most influential generation in Chinese history without a roadmap. Hong Huang is the Chinese publisher of 17 magazine. She also runs both Beijing and Shanghai's Time Out magazines, nightlife guides for people in the know.
Most of the information that we are providing them are about spending money in terms of travel, in terms of food, in terms of fashion and beauty.
Her mother was Mao Zedong's English translator. And now, in her magazines, the daughter is interpreting capitalism for a whole new generation. Life used to be all planned out. The government made the difficult decisions. But somewhere along the line, money changed everything, and maybe for the better.
When you talk about a country that has just woken up to identify itself away from a government, even when they go a little bit overboard on the consumerism, I think the individualism that it has awoken is a good thing.
Individualism wasn't a word I heard a lot when I lived here. And that's a monumental change, from strong, almost binding obligations to family and society, to something else for Patty Lian.
I do care about my parents, and surely I will support them in terms of financially and mentally. But you know what I mean. They should be independent on themselves.
Around midnight, as we're leaving the karaoke bar, I mentioned something I noticed coming back to China. How the gap between the reasonably well-off here and the people stuck in grinding poverty is so much more pronounced. And then something interesting happened. They all looked at each other and kind of shrugged. And right away, I remembered something Hong Huang had said.
When the old communist value system disappeared from China, there were no new value system to come in to replace it. So this search for a new value system is going to happen with this particular generation, and we don't know what they're going to find yet.
You can find more from China's 20-somethings in an audio slideshow on our website. It's marketplace.org. Taking a quick look at what's making news, you can score one for the office rumor mill. Back in Washington today, the Securities and Exchange Commission moved to make it easier to know what the guy in the corner office gets paid. Executives and boards can be creative in hiding all those various perks and benefits. From Washington Marketplace's Scott Tong has the story.
Don't look for the extreme cases of executive compensation in company filings. GE didn't mention Jack Welch used the corporate jet after he retired. Tyson Foods left out the part about rewarding its chairman with antiques and a horse. Berkeley Law professor Jesse Fried says the whole stealth thing is by design.
There have been cases where boards have agreed to adopt pension plans only after being assured that they were going to be off the radar screen.
Today, the SEC proposed to put all forms of pay on the screen. For instance, total compensation for every company's top five executives in the form of a single dollar number. That includes retirement benefits and deferred salaries. Compensation consultant John Oker says the new rules will make some corporate boards squirm.
I think there'll be some ratcheting back. I think there'll be some reconfiguration. You know, they may pay more base and bonus and get rid of the perks.
On the other hand, he says creative boards and consultants will still find ways to hide stuff. Others are even more pessimistic.
I'll spot you 20 points and bet you even money that it's not going to make a lick of difference.
Duke law professor James Cox says disclosure's fine, but the real problem is the board members who give out the sweet deals.
They are themselves executives. We find very few individuals who are serving on boards that are not from the executive suites or closely identified with the executive suites.
The SEC plan now goes out for public comment. Most assume some version will go through. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
If you own shares in Guidant, all you had to do today was sit back and watch the price go up. Boston Scientific raised its offer to buy the medical device maker to $80 a share, almost $27 billion overall. That's about 13% more than rival Johnson & Johnson's last offer. And today, Guidant declared it superior. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Johnson & Johnson and its rival Boston Scientific both want a piece of the $10 billion cardiac rhythm business. Baby boomers are aging, hearts are failing, and Guidant is the number two seller of the implantable devices that keep things ticking. The quest to buy the company seemed nearly over last Friday when Guidant's board accepted Johnson & Johnson's $24 billion offer. But today, Boston Scientific laid more than $27 billion on the table. The size of the increase surprised analysts. Analyst Steve Brozak with WBB Securities.
I wouldn't want to play poker with Boston Scientific. I mean, this is a textbook case study of how to go out there and get people's attention.
Particularly Guidant shareholders. Today, many were leaning toward Boston Scientific. Jefferies & Company analyst Ryan Rao says Boston got creative with its deal. Healthcare company Abbott Laboratories kicked in extra financing. Abbott would also own a piece of the new company. Rao says that would solve antitrust concerns.
One of the sticky points why Guidant's board seems to have been going along with J&J's increased offers is time. I mean, J&J already has antitrust clearance, whereas Boston has yet to garner that. So they not only need Abbott from a financial standpoint, they need them to take certain assets to get around antitrust regulation.
One analyst worries Boston Scientific might have gone too far. David Tong with Argus Research says at the current price, shareholders wouldn't see a return on their investment until 5 years from now. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Full disclosure time, Boston Scientific is an underwriter of this program. All the factories and shopping malls and housing developments that are being built here in China have to be put someplace. Mostly, it's farms. And more often, farmers are protesting their evictions. Police today are patrolling a village in southern China. A 13-year-old girl was reportedly clubbed to death there last weekend during one of those demonstrations. Best estimates are about 800 million peasants in this country have been left behind by the economic boom. And this is Marketplace, live from Chongqing, China. Coming up, to get rich is glorious.
If you are rich, you are the hero. And if you are not rich, that is your bad luck.
But first, let's do the numbers. Oil futures jumped well past $65 a barrel today. That plus some general anxiety over earnings explains the rough day on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial slipped 63 points, 0.5% to get to 10,896. The NASDAQ fell 14 points, 0.6%, ending at 2302. The S&P 500 dropped 4 points, 0.3% to finish at 1282. Not to gloat, but a cheerier story on this side of the world. The Shanghai Composite Index rose 5 points, or 0.4%, to close at 1208. China released some oil consumption numbers today, but analysts aren't buying it. Beijing says oil use here dropped 0.3% last year. Experts say that number more likely rose last year, anywhere from 3 to 6%. That is a classical Chinese flute playing our numbers music, by the way. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.34%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, supporting the role that an experienced financial advisor can play in building a well-rounded financial program. Market data and news brought to you by Reuters. Reporting from around the world, every day, every hour, every second. Reuters helps you stay in the know now. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Marketplace is broadcasting live from China all this week. If you want to find out more, drop by our website. You'll find exclusive online features, including slideshows, a staff blog, and an interview with the musicians who created the Chinese version of our theme music. It's all at www.marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the special China edition of the Marketplace Datebook. In 1981, China introduced prosperity cards, what you and I call plastic, but they were only for Chinese living outside China. In 1985, two Bank of China officials were the first to get credit cards inside the border. As of June 2004, only 7 million Western-style cards were in circulation, with a mere 2% of merchants accepting them. Visa is not quite everywhere you want to be just yet. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal, and the program is live this week from Chongqing, China. About 160 miles northwest of here, up near the border with Tibet, is the city of Chengdu. It has a reputation for being the California of China. Good climate, kind of laid back, a big outdoor scene. But as Marketplace's Nate DeMeo discovered, some of the people in Chengdu are starting to feel a bit stressed out.
At a park on the Funan River, and just about everywhere else in Chengdu, you'll find people playing a card game called Dodiju. It's become a big part of the social and work lives of the city's entrepreneurs. Businesswoman Wang Xiaoqing says she has spent far too many nights and far too much money gambling.
This class of people sits around and plays Dodiju or Mahjong all night long. They don't care about themselves. I used to do that too. But every night I would notice my rings were getting looser. I was shrinking. I was becoming decadent.
Wang Xiaoqing is a member of a new class of wealthy entrepreneur in a country that not too long ago actively stamped out class distinctions. And along the way, it also managed to bury centuries of cultural practices, philosophical tenets, and whole religions.
A phrase that gets repeated to me all the time is that, you know, Chinese people, especially wealthy Chinese people, they don't believe in anything. A consequence of that is that they don't know how to live their lives once they have money.
John Osberg is a PhD candidate in anthropology at the University of Chicago. He has played a lot of Dodiju. In the last 3 years, he's gone with Chengdu's high rollers to its fanciest restaurants, massage parlors, saunas, tea houses, all in the name of social science. He says the wealthy business people of Chengdu, in interview after interview, say they feel lost or they don't have a path to follow.
There's no single model that really stands out as this is how I should behave as an elite wealthy Chinese person, and that the only lifestyle there is this one of consumption and hedonism.
It's a lifestyle that's become the subject of a string of recent novels. Books like Chengdu Beauties, In Chengdu, Love Only Lasts 8 Months, and Chengdu, Leave Me Alone Tonight, tell tales of debauchery and consumption in salacious detail. It's a world Tai Jun knows well.
People I know will go to a club, get the most expensive private room, and then order up a room full of girls and the most expensive liquor. They'll sit there drinking and asking the girls to drink and go crazy with them. But at the very end, when the party's over and we walk out of the room, people aren't actually happy.
Growing up, the teachings of Mao Zedong were part of Tai Jun's daily life. His parents were brought together by the Communist Party in an arranged marriage. They taught him that the fight against capitalism and bourgeois materialism must be perpetual. But now even the Chinese Communist Party has started to embrace capitalism. Tai Jun says Mao's ideas never reflected reality. People want to get ahead and compete. Capitalism is human nature. But capitalism, he says, doesn't provide a spiritual foundation or any moral framework.
China is like a baby that has just been woken up, and now he doesn't know what to do with himself.
John Osberg points out that there's a whole segment of Chinese society only just figuring out that there's more to life than spending money on wine, women, and song. But the problem is that wine, women, and song are key components of how business gets done here.
The line between what's work and leisure for them is very blurry.
The Chinese call it incho. It essentially means doing business by entertaining, and it's an integral part of the Chinese way of life and work. Osberg says in the world of the new rich, if you're not drinking, gambling, or even visiting brothels with business leaders, then you're not in business. And that life is starting to trouble many of the entrepreneurs he talks to.
It's a lifestyle that's not sustainable. And I think most people, they do lead that lifestyle for a few years, and then they suddenly ask themselves, you know, well, what am I doing? You know, am I happy doing this? But it's very difficult for them to adopt a new lifestyle because it would mean leaving this group that's crucial to their business success. So it takes, in a sense, a pioneer to go out and start doing their own thing.
Wang Xiaoqing thinks she just might be that pioneer. A couple of years ago, she saw a workaholic friend succumb to cancer at 33. She says it made her realize how much her own work had come to dominate her life. She'd go to the doctors, and everyone in the waiting room would be a boss or a business person whose body had simply broken down from too many late nights and lavish meals. Now, she says she slowed down and started taking care of her health. She says she's no longer obsessed with making money. And others would like to make the same changes. She says that some members of this new class are starting to turn to religion for direction. And as people here wake up to the idea that money isn't everything, she's found an opportunity.
Some of them want to leave their circle, but none of their friends are going to do it for them. They need someone like me. When I appear, it's like the sun is coming out.
She started a business that teaches people how to lead a healthier lifestyle and not care so much about money. In Chengdu, I'm Nate DeMeo for Marketplace.
Photos of Chengdu and its newly rich at play are on our website. It's marketplace.org. Sitting where I am right now, in Chongqing, you can almost hear the economy popping. So today's announcement that China's GDP grew by 9.8% in 2005 is no surprise. China definitely feels richer than when I lived here 8 years ago. More cars, more designer stores. And clearly, there's a price to all this progress. Reverend Gao Ying is in line to head up China's only national seminary, the Nanjing Theological Seminary. I asked her, if China is moving forward, what is it leaving behind?
Well, I think money had never been so important in our society like now. Before, to be part of the ruling body was much more important than becoming a businessman. If you could become an officer, if you could become a teacher, that would be much valued, much honored than a business person. But now, if you are rich, you are the hero. And if you are not rich, that is your bad luck.
The Chinese civilization has been stable and spiritual for thousands and thousands of years. But it's only been maybe 20 or 30 that there's been money in China. And I'm wondering, what happened to those thousands of years? Did they just evaporate?
Well, you know, after the Cultural Revolution, China has shifted its political policy to free market. This whole society is motivated to become rich. The whole nation is motivated to be rich. So the younger generation, they are so much influenced by this new value.
I wonder, though, if you're afraid at all. And I ask that question because of this. 25 and 30-year-olds today will soon start having children. And their children, when they grow up, will see mom and dad wanting to get rich and richer and richer and richer. And if you think that children look to their parents for role models, what does that say for China 20 years from now, 50 years from now?
Well, for me personally, I'm not so concerned and not so worried about that, because I think right now, this moral or this ideological value is only temporary. When Chinese economic development
reaches to a certain point when people materially advanced, they will realize that we should appreciate, we should cherish our own tradition. You know, there is a revival of Confucianism because now some people already realized that we should appreciate our own cultural tradition. So for the long run, I am optimistic.
Reverend Gao Ying is expected to be appointed vice president of the Nanjing Theological Seminary. What do you think about the values of China's young people? Have Americans learned anything from decades of affluence? Can you have too much stuff? Send your thoughts to letters at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Boston Scientific, developing new medical technology so that someday innovation will spread faster than disease. Delivering what's next. BostonScientific.com. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
There is a lot more money in China than there used to be, and some soul-searching to boot. But I didn't have to go very far out here in Chongqing to find a place free of spiritual angst and full of poverty. I walked up a steep, winding road called Danza Shirt, Slingshot Rock in English. The buildings are more broken down than anything I've seen in China before. They're almost medieval. Shops downstairs, homes upstairs, makeshift hospitals peddling traditional Chinese herbs, tailors using coal-fired irons to press their seams, and barbershops with haircuts for 4 kuai, just 50 cents. Up the road, a middle-aged woman sells blankets from what turns out to be her shop and her living room, both of them open onto the street. The finest cotton from Xinjiang, her sign says, and there's a 5-year guarantee. It's tough to believe, though, that any of these buildings will still be standing in a year, let alone 5 years from now. So I ask her whether she'll be around to make good on the guarantee, whether she won't just move to one of the housing developments nearby. No, I'm not moving, she says. I'll definitely be here. To be honest, the chances she is still going to be here in 5 years are pretty slim. But wherever she is still going to be poor. That's China. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Thanks to Stacey Vanek Smith and Brian Watt on our morning report crew. The senior producer of the Marketplace Morning Report is Wendy Sykes. Next time on the program, the Great Mall of China. Live in Chongqing, I'm Kai Rizdal. Zaijian. We'll see you tomorrow. That's American Public Media, by the way.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.